Before we begin, I want to tell you that, much of what I'm sharing with you is out of this book, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and How to Listen So Kids Will Talk. There is one copy in the library here. They're also available at the bookstore. They're $10. What I like, a couple things I like about it, these cartoons. And I've got some of them on transparencies. But when I read it, I just see myself. And it helps me have an example of the things I wish I didn't say. And then you have examples of things that I can say differently. Also, there are questions and answers at the end of each chapter and stories from honest-to-goodness real-life parents of how it works or doesn't work. And then they have these little things, which is whatever the bottom line is, they've got it written down. And I've been known to Xerox this and tape it to my refrigerator door. And it does help me. It does help me a lot. So I offer that to you. Also, if you are a parent educator or on the adult education or Sunday school committee of your church and you'd like to lead a workshop like this, you can write them. They have a whole workshop folder with tapes that you can use. And so it's a good resource for you. All right. Anything from yesterday? We talked about listening and feelings. Did any of you try out anything? Anybody? Some of you were here, you tried out? Did you? You did. Any boo-boos or successes?
It was nothing dramatic. And one thing came up, and it was in regards to a feeling, you know, when we talked about yesterday, and it's the concept that I was familiar with, like if you see a child feeling some way, and you may or may not know the feeling, but you go ahead and name a feeling, like, you know, you look mad, are you mad right now? And she was mad about something that had happened, and I don't specifically recall what it was. We did that with our daughter, and then we did one with our middle son, too, the same kind of thing. Another time, you know, you talked about not offering advice or, you know, being judgmental or anything, and I forget the cartoon it was, but just going, we did that one.
Did it work?
Something, and, yeah.
And did they tell more?
A little bit more, not a lot more.
Last week, the second day, one of the moms came in, and she was beaming. And she said, well, I've tried it out, but not on my kids. I use it on my husband. And I said, would you be willing to share? And she says, yeah. They put the kids to sleep, and the kids were sleeping. It was just the two of them. He says to her, well, did you bring any sexy lingerie to hold in? And she said, I wish I had. And then she described what she thought it would look like. And they had a wonderful evening together. We just laughed the whole rest of the day from her comment. It was just wonderful. And it made me think, now I'm not a proponent of pornography, and I'm well aware if you stay up late at night, especially Sunday nights, and you can call that 900 psychic line where people will just talk to you and listen. You can also call a pornography line where people will just talk to you. They give you your wishes in fantasy. So there's a booming business out there. And why not take that principle but use it with our kids? All right, I want to tell you a story of two boys. Once upon a time, there were 2 7-year-old boys named Bruce and David. They both had mothers who loved them very much. Why is it always the mothers in these stories, huh? Each boy's day began differently. The first thing Bruce heard when he awakened in the morning was, "Get up now, Bruce, you're going to be late for school." Bruce got up, dressed himself, except for his shoes, and came in for breakfast. Mother said, "Where are your shoes? Are you planning to go to school barefoot? And look what you're wearing. That blue sweater looks awful with that green shirt. Bruce, dear, what have you done to your pants? They're ripped. I want you to change them after breakfast. No child of mine is going to school like that. Now watch how you pour your juice. Don't spill it the way you usually do." Bruce poured and spilled. Mother was exasperated. As she mopped up the mess, she said, "I don't know what to do with you." Bruce mumbled something to himself. "What was that?" Mother asked. "There you go, mumbling again." Bruce finished his breakfast. Then he changed his pants, put on his shoes, collected his books, and left for school. His mother called out, "Bruce, you forgot your lunch. You'd forget your head, too, if it wasn't screwed on your shoulders."
Rufus took his lunch, and as he started out the door again, Mother reminded him, "Now be sure to behave at school." David lived across the street. The first thing he heard in the morning was, 7 o'clock, David, do you want to get up now or take 5 more minutes? David rolled over and said, 5 minutes. Later he came to breakfast dressed, except for his shoes. Mother said, "Hey, you're dressed already. All you have left is to put on your shoes." "Uh-oh, there's a rip in the seam of your pants. Looks as if the whole side could split. Shall I sew it on you while you stand up, or would you rather change?" David thought a second and said, "I'll change after breakfast." Then he sat down at the table and poured his juice, and he spilled some. "The cleanup rag is in the sink," Mother called over her shoulder as she continued making his lunch. David got the rag and wiped up the spill. They talked for a while as David ate his breakfast. When he finished, he changed his pants, put on his shoes, collected his books, and left for school without his lunch. Mother called after him, "David, your lunch." He ran back to get it and thanked her. As she handed it to him, she said, "See you later." Both Bruce and David are in the same class. During the day, the teacher tells the class, "Children, as you already know, we'll be putting on our play next week. We need a volunteer to paint a colorful welcome sign on our classroom door. We also need a volunteer to pour and serve lemonade for our guests that day. And finally, we need someone who will go around to the other third graders and make a short speech inviting everyone to our play and telling them the time and place." Some of the children raise their hands immediately, some raise their hands tentatively, and some don't raise their hands at all. Okay. And that's where our story ends. Now, some questions for us to consider. You see that? Better today. Okay. Do you think David or Bruce would raise their hands to volunteer?
David.
You think David would? What makes you think David would?
Well, he was given positive reinforcement for doing things. Mm-hmm. Being on his own.
Being on his own. Independent. Mm-hmm. And if he made a mistake, he was responsible for those mistakes too. Yeah. Do you think Bruce would? I don't think Bruce would. Okay. What do you see as a relationship between how those boys see themselves and their willingness to accept challenges, to risk failure? What do you think there? Who may take on a challenge?
David.
You bet. Now, Bruce may, but I don't know. I think David's got more going for him. And then, what's the relationship between how the children think of themselves and the goals they may set for themselves? Who may reach further?
David.
Okay. Okay, now, Bruce and David are both average math students. Later in the day, the teacher returns a test on long division. They must be in fourth grade by now. And the children had taken earlier in the week. Both boys get 62. Now, that's not the best grade, is it? Okay. What do you think Bruce would say?
"Mom's going to kill me."
"Mom's going to kill me." Yeah. "Maybe I'll hide it in my desk and not tell Mom." What do you think Bruce's mom might say to him if he brought that back?
"I knew you'd do that."
"I knew you." Ooh, doesn't that just break your heart when you hear it? "I knew you'd do badly." Ooh, ooh, ooh. Now, what about David? Say it again.
"I'm going to have to try harder."
"I'm going to have to try harder."
"Yeah. Can I help you with your homework?"
And that's what the mom might say. "Can I help you with your homework?" Okay. Maybe we can. Okay. Very different. Now, of course, this is all hypothetical. And some children withstand criticism at home very well. And they go on, and they're great successes, and they write books and videotapes about them. It's very good. Other children have a very, very supportive environment at home, yet still have difficulty functioning and risk-taking in the world. However, most children who grow up in a home where there is self-esteem and respect and praise do better in the world. Nathaniel Brandon has said this. Whoa. I'm spatially challenged, so these transparencies are really tough for me. There's no value judgment more important to a person, no factor more decisive in one's psychological development and motivation than the estimate one passes on oneself. The nature of one's self-evaluation has profound effects on one's thinking processes, emotions, desires, values, and goals. It is the single most important key to one's behavior. Now, I don't know if I agree that's the single most important key to behavior, but I'd say it is way, way up there. We talked about that yesterday, a study done in 1987 by the National Center for Self-Esteem and kindergartners. 70% of them said they had very high self-esteem. Now you wonder about the 30%, but 70%. And each year, by the third grade, by fifth, by ninth, it progressed down to when the ninth grade, it was 15% of those young people had self-esteem. And by the time they were seniors, ready to go to college, maybe to get married, to take on the world, take on responsibilities, 9%. It's very bad news, very bad news. Okay. Self-esteem is so very important. What are the ages of our children? Mine are almost 6 and 9.
10.
Grandsons, 11 and 15.
Okay. 1, 4, and 7.
6, 3, and 20 months.
6, 3, and 20 months.
18, 19.
8, 11, 12, and 14.
Whoa! That's great.
18 and grown.
18 and grown.
8, 9, 7.
8.
8.
8.
8.
6 tomorrow, 9, and 12.
Grandchildren from 8 to 17.
How many grandkids do you have?
6.
6. Isn't that great? I hope I get to be a grandparent. No pressure on my kids, but it looks really good to me.
Grandchild I'm most concerned about right now.
Is 15. Tough years.
Yeah. 2.5 and 6 for grandchildren.
2.5, 6. Okay. What do you, as parents and grandparents, what do you think we can do to help raise our kids' self-esteem? Any ideas that you have?
And I'll write them up.
You can say thank you.
Well, positive reinforcement, that somebody appreciates what I'm doing. Makes you feel good about themselves, you bet. What else?
Anything they can do, don't do for them.
Ooh.
If they can do it, don't do it for them.
If they can do it, you don't do it. Okay, as a parent.
Which means slow down.
Slow down.
Because they don't do it as fast as well.
This is one of the dads yesterday remembered someone who was here teaching a class at Holden a few years back, and he referred to this book, Creative Brooding. Isn't that a great book? Do you know it?
No, it's just a great title.
Okay. I'm going to read your letter. And it's about listening, but slowing down. Dear folks, thank you for everything, but I'm going to Chicago to try and start a new kind of life. You asked me why I did those things and why I gave you so much trouble, and the answer is easy for me to give you, but I'm wondering if you will understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want you to just listen to me? I remember all the nice things you gave me for Christmas and my birthday, and I was really happy with the things about a week at the time I got the things, but the rest of the time during the year, I really didn't want presents. I just wanted all the time for you to listen to me, like I was somebody who felt things too. Because I remember, even when I was young, I felt things, but you said you were busy. Mom, stab my heart here, you are a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were tired so much from doing all those things that made you busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you'd only sat down with me a while during the day and said to me, tell me all about it so that maybe I can help understand. And when Donna came, I couldn't understand why everyone made such a fuss, because I didn't think it was my fault that her hair is curly and her skin so white and she doesn't have to wear glasses with such thick lenses. Her grades were better too, weren't they? If Donna ever has children, I hope you will tell her to just pay some attention to the one who doesn't smile very much, because that one will really be crying inside. And when she's about to bake 6 dozen cookies, to make sure first that the kids don't want to tell her about a dream or a hope or something, because thoughts are important too to small kids, even though they don't have so many words to use when they tell about what they have inside them. I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair worrying about are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen a few minutes and who really and truly will treat them as they would a grown-up who might be useful to them, you know, polite to them. If you folks had ever said to me, "Pardon me," when you'd interrupted me, I'd have dropped dead. If anyone asks you where I am, tell them I've gone looking for somebody with time because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. Love to all, your son. And this is written by a boy with a record as a juvenile delinquent. And then at the very end says, "Help me today while there is still time to listen." I mean, it's painful, isn't it? Brings kind of emotions to me just to even read it. Just very tough.
Slow down.
Okay. Let them do what they can do. Let them problem solve. Respect. Thank you. My kids love it when I say I'm sorry. Screwed up big time. Yeah. One time, you know, we have certain words that you can't say in our house, and in our house, really the S word is stupid. It's not the other S word, but one time my husband out in the car said the other S word, and Kyle, the 9-year-old, overheard him, came in. Did you hear what Dad said? Yeah, I heard what Dad said. He's not supposed to say that. No. He's very frustrated. I know, but when I get frustrated, I can't say it. Okay. He goes out and he gives his dad time out. Scott sat down, had time out, and took the consequence for the behavior. That was okay, you know, for him to do that back. Okay. Surely praise may seem like something else that we can do. And it is, yet praise is a tricky, tricky business.
Somebody in there is talking to children about, and I haven't formulated my thoughts here, but something in talk about inspiring things, whether it's someone in the family that has achieved, something that will stimulate their thinking and set kind of a moral framework from which they can grow forward.
To encourage them to strive?
Yes.
And be motivated?
Yes. And with, again, basic goals, basic values as part of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really hated that when I was growing up because I had those messages, "You're Uncle so-and-so," or so-and-so, and I, being just a small child, didn't think that I could ever do all those things. Those were big grown-up things. And so I felt that I wasn't ever going to be as good as they were. So that wasn't helpful for me. Maybe there's another way to give that message. But it was always, you know, a lot, they're just, you know, this is just wonderful, look what he's done. This is, you know, your aunt so-and-so has done this. And I thought, I'm only, you know, 6 or 7, and I just can't ever dream that I could do that sort of thing.
I know exactly what you're saying.
And,
but I think there are ways of saying it. And I think youngsters need to have this background. That's my feeling.
Like a role model? Is that what you mean?
Yes, role model, but I like to go even beyond that. I like to get the philosophy, the basic moral standards and so on behind it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like when you heard a great success story, that on the inside, you also heard judgment.
Well, I also knew not, I mean, I should explain a little more, not just that I couldn't maybe do those sorts of things, but maybe I didn't want to, or that wasn't my area of interest. Maybe I wasn't going to be interested in being a good musician and playing in that band or doing mm-hmm. this or that. And so that made me feel even smaller, like, why doesn't that seem to be what I want to do or what mm-hmm. I can do? Mm-hmm. it wasn't just being loved for just being okay to be whatever I could be. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just being saying, grow up, do the best you can, or be whoever you are. It was be like this, be like
be
this,
like, be that. Like that. Yeah, I know kids who have you know, gotten, who are generally A students and have gotten B's and been so crushed by the B, and you know, have gone to do terrible things to themselves, hurting their bodies because, you know, the, even that one thing was too much. And so that how do you inspire a child and motivate them and yet not make it so high that it is unattainable, or that's the way it feels? There's a balance between those two. Yeah.
I think we have to be careful not to choose the child's goals. You know, otherwise, inspiring them, you know, inspiring them to find themselves is different than trying to inspire them to be something you want them to be.
Yeah.
We had an experience driving about the weekend before we came here. Well, I guess what I'd like to add, there's maybe we need to reserve judgment on certain things. Reserve judgment on what they choose. In some ways, because anyway, we were driving, and my 9-year-old flipped in one of the, kind of played some music in the car, and he wanted to flip in this tape, and it just so happened that it's the only tape he's ever bought. It's called Jazz Boom. Have you ever seen those tapes?
Yeah.
It was jazz, and there's this, we're from Minnesota, and there's these boom, it drives me crazy. So I said, sure, Ben, and you just finished playing Jazz Boom. But it's not Jazz Moon, is it? You know, and everybody in the car said, it's not Jazz Moon, is it? You know, and so we put in a different thing, and then about 15 minutes later, I noticed Ben's, you know, looking out the window, stopping, you know, and it was like, what's wrong? Well, every time I want to play Jazz Moon, somebody puts me down for it, you know. It's because he likes the music, you know, no one else does, and everybody's sort of judging him for what he was. He's trying to find his own music.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's on little things like that that we can reserve judgment.
Yeah.
You know, and save judgment for other bigger things, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, how many kids grow up thinking that the only thing that is acceptable or really great being is a doctor or a lawyer? And, you know, there's so many things that become unacceptable then, and that's what I really want to do.
Right.
The thing that I was talking about was not choosing what the kids should do, and I'll give an example. My dad had to go to work when he finished fourth grade. One of the goals he had was that us kids go to college. He said, I don't care what you do, but he says, I want you to go to college. And there were a whole lot of moral values along with that. That's the type of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think these are complex issues, and this is infinity, right? But I think of it as polarities, that you know, maybe to the extreme. Now, I'm not saying you're being at the extreme, but someone who would push it out, would you know, be reading to their children and encouraging them to huge big dreams, and like the only thing you could be is an astronaut, and that what that child wants to do more than all is play the organ. Okay. And then someone over here who has no hopes and dreams for their child, you know, I mean, either extremes. And generally I think in the middle, in the balance between those two things, we find a better place where we can live. And you know, sensitivity to where kids are and their uniqueness. And so you have 1 out of 5 in your family that likes Jazz Loon. Can your family receive Jazz Loon? You know, I mean, I'd take that over some of the, you know, wild stuff kids are listening. But if it drives you crazy, it drives you crazy. And so how do you have a car where Jazz Loon is okay, but also Metallica, I guess, is okay too, you know, or whatever it is. It's tricky business. We're going to go on into praise, because I think praise is kind of a tricky thing, and I want to challenge us a little bit on. Oh yeah, I'm terrible on this. Okay.
I at one point I wanted to be a, talking about challenges, I wanted to be an interior decorator. I was in ninth grade and they had this battery test, and I told the counselor that's what I wanted to be, and the counselor basically said, well, that's a good goal. And if you want to do that, I encourage you to do that. However, I want to tell you that your natural giftedness is, that would be your bottom. Really. And some people say that in our house we have Lego furniture. I mean, we change the furniture in our living room 3-4 times a year. But, you know, I have to see each one. You know, my kids and everybody draws these pictures, but I can't see it until I can walk into it. I'm just spatially challenged. Okay. You have unexpected guests for dinner. You heat a can of cream of chicken soup, add leftover chicken, serve it with mineral rice. Your guest says you're a great cook. Okay. What's going on inside? You may not say it, but what are you thinking?
I mean, patronized.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah. If you think this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you hear it as praise? I don't hear it as praise. Okay. How about this? You just changed out of your sweater and jeans into a new outfit to go to this important meeting. An acquaintance approaches you, looks you over, and says, you're always so beautifully dressed. What happens inside there? Do you like it?
I think it depends who you are. You know, some people, to be beautifully dressed is what they're all about. That's a big part of their life.
Okay.
To other people, they can give a rip. So I think it depends on your priorities.
But this scenario kind of suggests that she lives in other clothing, and that for this very important meeting, she had bought special clothing, but generally speaking, she's fairly casual in her clothing. And so, again, it may ring kind of untrue that generally I'm a comfortably dressed person as opposed to a smartly, beautifully dressed person. And you get that conflicting sense in your gut.
It may make the person wonder, do they think I'm poorly dressed the rest of the time? Is this really how they want me to dress? Our colleagues has these gorgeous blue eyes, and so if he wears a blue, like Oxford blue shirt, he just looks so handsome. Well, and often he wears this blue shirt and he has a whole new outfit on, and he doesn't, clothes are not his priority. And all the women, the support staff, Steve, you know, and they complimented. We didn't see that outfit for a year. It was not, it didn't hit home. I mean, they were being very authentic, but something happened inside of him that didn't make him feel comfortable anymore.
Another thought that might come is a person really serious, or are they just flattering me?
You bet. Or are they trying to get something from me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. What's the motive here?
Okay.
I
think there's a bunch of paranoia going on here. I take it.
You take it? Okay. I think everyone's different. You know, everybody's interaction is different. Here's another. You're taking an adult education course. After a lively class discussion in which you participate, another student comes up to you and says, you have a brilliant mind.
To me, it has to do with how the person says it. You know, you can tell if a person's being genuine or not most of the time.
Sometimes it's putting themselves down.
Yeah.
Right.
It's on the inside.
Oh, you could do that, but I couldn't speak up. I didn't have anything to say.
Yeah. And again, it's that inner reaction. Sometimes when we bump up against praise, you have a brilliant mind, you're a good thinker, you think, oh, but, you know, if you only really knew, or like somebody would, you know, if you saw me some other times, you wouldn't say that. You know, we kind of tend to discount it. And I think that is very real, and also very much the same for our kids. Here's some things that not everybody feels, but some built-in problems with praise. One thing is we doubt the praiser. You know, the cream of chicken stuff.
I think this person has no taste at all. You know, if they think that is great, I might think this is, you know, I question that person. It can lead to immediate denial. You should have seen me an hour ago. I look trashy, okay? It can be threatening. I don't feel safe with you. How am I gonna look next time? If you like this and I don't look like that, I may feel threatened. It may also inadvertently help you to focus on your weaknesses. I can't really do math. How can I have a brilliant mind but when I can't do story problems? I'm not that brilliant. And the person didn't mean to say that, but that's what happened in my head. We may experience praise as manipulation. What do they want from me? It can also create anxiety. Boy, I spoke up a lot. What if I don't speak up a lot next time? Now, praise is not meant to do that, but this is what can happen. Words that evaluate, good, that's a beautiful picture. How often do we find ourselves saying that? Can actually make people feel uncomfortable. A couple weeks ago, we had guests, and a filling came out of our guest tooth. So we went to a drugstore and walked in, and I don't go to this drugstore very much, and there's a woman there, and I said, we're looking for the stuff that you put in your tooth when a filling comes out, and she went right to it. She says, I think I know where that is. She goes around, she finds it, we find it, and I said to her, wow, you really know the merchandise in your store. And she said, oh, no, 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 no. I just happen to know this one thing. Okay. And I thought, gee, you know, I could have said that differently so that she would have received the praise. Helpful praise comes in two parts. One is when you describe with appreciation what you see or what you feel. And then after hearing the description, the child or the other person, they praise themselves. So descriptive praise is where we're going. My son Nate brings home something and I say, that's beautiful, right? That's what just comes out of my mouth. I have to kind of think again and say, wow, I really like how you put all these lines together and the colors, because it's just a scribble. And he'll say, I'm an artist. If I describe it, he praises himself. If I say it's beautiful, it kind of dies. Okay? Look at this cartoon. This is what I love about this book. Aren't I terrible? Okay. Instead of evaluating, describe what you see or feel. You cleaned your room. What a good girl you are. I'm not so good. I stuffed some toys under the bed. How about this? I see a lot of work has been going on here. All the blocks are back in the shelf. Every record is back in its jacket. And every single marble has been picked up. It's a pleasure to walk into this room. I really know how to clean up when I want to. And she may even go back and take the things out from underneath the bed. This scarf you made me is beautiful, so very, very nice. I wonder if he really likes it. How about describing? Look at this rich red color and these thick fringes and all these rows and rows of even stitches. And it's wide too. This scarf will really keep me warm on a cold day. He likes it. When you describe it, I mean, you can kind of, it feels different, doesn't it? This is lovely. You write good poetry. Good. Does she really mean it? How about this? I'm moved by your poem about the eagle. I especially love the line, the beat of giant wings. I can write good poems. Tomorrow I'll write another. You know, descriptive praise, that kind of rings and moves and lands in a different way. A few weeks ago, Kyle took out the trash. And I didn't even have to ask him myself. And I said, you took out the trash and you thought of doing it all by yourself. I really appreciate it. And Kyle said to me, I can be a good helper. Of course, then I wanted to say, boy, I wish you would have been a good help. You know, I mean, that's what, see, this just kind of flips out of my mouth. I have to just tighten those little lips. It's easier to say it's good, it's beautiful, it's wonderful than to really describe it. Describing it, I have to think, take time, I have to move in myself. What do I really like about it? But it rings so much better to our children. Okay? And now I want us to do a little work with each other. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Would you get into twos? And if you're going to be married to each other, probably better if you went with somebody else. Okay? This is the hard part. This is where we have to kind of practice it. Okay? Here's what you can do. Just see if you can do it in twos. A young child has just dressed herself for the first time. She stands in front of you, hoping you'll notice. Okay, how could you praise unhelpfully? Okay. And then what might the child say? And how could you praise by describing? And then what might the child say? Okay. You know, if you want to add in that the buttons aren't centered, you know, or whatever, that's okay. But this young child has just dressed himself for the first time. Okay. Work in twos and see if we can come up with some things. She might feel, ooh.
From those but sentences, I like that you dressed yourself, but you didn't do it right.
This is time for your story, Paul. Will you tell your story?
Yeah. I'm a coach and a teacher. And in the context of those experiences, I read this psychological study by a sports psychologist who had three control groups of kids who young kids, 10 or so, who wouldn't, of course, understand motivational techniques by teachers. And the three control groups each had to run a 100-yard dash every other day for 5 weeks. And the first group, he told them, that was good, but... And then he'd give them kind of a neutral, but kind, you know, analysis. That was good, but relax your neck. That was good, but raise your arm. That was good, but point your knees to your head. The second control group, no praise, just neutral analysis. I mean, he didn't say, pick up your knees higher, you dummy. He would just say, I think you should lift. I mean, very kind, all nice atmosphere. Lift your knees higher, lower your arms, relax your neck, and just what I would call neutral, analytical, biomechanical analysis stuff for like coaches sometimes do. And the third control group was told, no analysis, biomechanical breakdown, or anything, just were praised. Like the kid that falls down, you got up faster than anybody I've ever seen. The kid that finishes last and he's fat and he waddles over the line and says, gee, your neck is relaxed so nice. You just run so relaxed and moist. And then he graphed their progress in group one, group two, and group three. The only group that got better was the one that wasn't coached, wasn't taught. I quit my job after this. All I needed to do was be praised to make their kids get better.
And
praise, just as the way you said it.
It's descriptive praise.
It's very descriptive.
It's descriptive praise.
Yeah.
Always honest, though.
Yeah, but sometimes he really had to dig to find something that fell down. But he did dig, and he found it. And
that's amazing to me, the difference descriptive praise makes. Okay, is there an example of descriptive praise when a child does this? Stress themselves the first time.
Itemize the things that the girl was put on, and stress what to achieve their best.
You bet. And you put on your socks and look your shoes. And yesterday I was reading a book, and Nathan popped in. He didn't want to play the parachute game anymore, and he said, "I'm going to go get a book at the library." I said, "Okay, look, you know, look both ways on that street." Comes back with a book. And I said, I checked out a book. You checked out a book. How did you do it? He said, I took the card out and I wrote my name. He said, see, and he showed me that the little flap was empty. I said, and where did you put it? I put it in the little box, all by yourself. And he gave me his big hug and he said, I'm gonna get five more. Came back with five more books, and he showed me each one, how, you know, and he talked to me everything he had done. And then he said, do you want to see me do it? Yes. We went back, we got six books. I mean, he came back, we had 12 books. He wanted me to see it. You know, it was really great. Descriptive praise is a lovely thing. Okay, let's do one more. Let's do situation number three here. Cool. Okay, you notice that your child's schoolwork is improving in small ways. His compositions now have margins. He's been drilling himself in his vocabulary words until he knows them. His last report was finished one day ahead of time. Okay? Unhelpful things, you could say, and descriptive praise. Work that in your twos.
Yeah.
You need more time? Got quiet there. Okay. An unhelpful praise statement.
See, you got done before the deadline, but what about the punctuation?
Oh. But, the big but. Yeah, good.
See, I knew you could do it.
I knew you could do it. You know, and that one maybe, you know, the tone of that one. I don't know. I still think that you know, if that one may fall over here. You may feel that of, I didn't do it last time. You know, all this stuff comes up.
That's a hard one.
It is a hard one.
Because you think you're saying, I knew you had it in you.
Yeah.
But you're still doing the butt, kind of.
That's right.
And
it's the difference might be
You are owning it.
That's true.
Let's see.
What do you mean by that? You're owning it.
Yeah,
when
you say that,
yeah.
I knew you could do it, it becomes yours instead of...
That's almost, when you say, I'm proud of you, all of a sudden, you know, I mean, that's a lovely thing, but the focus gets on, I'm proud, as opposed to, you can be proud of that.
Yeah.
That puts it on their accomplishment. These things, you could call evaluative praise, as opposed to descriptive praise. And that's what we're trying to work on. Any descriptive praising? We've had evaluated praise, and we've had some other. We've had the good but.
You should be proud of yourself.
You should be proud.
Yeah.
No, the should. Can you say that without the should?
I hope that you're proud of yourself.
I hope that you're proud of yourself. Or you can be proud of yourself. Sometimes the should.
Are you proud of yourself?
Are you proud? If I was you, I'd be proud. Big beam, yeah. You know, people say, don't shit on yourself. You've heard that one.
Yeah.
And I give that to you, too. Okay.
What about if we can ask a question? How about if we just say back, how do you feel about this?
Okay, part of it, if the child has come in and is offering you almost like a gift, and you say, how do you feel about it? It's going to seem like, you know, let's put on a little white coat and, you know, do our study. It seems very clinical. You know, I mean, you know.
They want something from you.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's like, get out the cookies. This is a celebration.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that kind of a thing. But if there's excitement in your eyes and, boy, how does that feel? And they tell you about it. I think that's very different than cold clinical. Yeah.
Well, when you're using these exercises, they're not sort of natural. You know, at some point, I think that the child knows that, too. I remember going to one of my kids' classes. He was bringing a project to his wings class, you know. So this is a woman who's really good with kids, you know, and he brought the project. And she just stood there for about a minute going, oh, wow, you know. And Ben was taking it all in. I felt like she was exercising a technique. You know, I mean, it was genuine, but I could tell that it was something that she, you know, that it was sort of a technique, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that at some point, kids kind of know that. It's kind of like when you know a salesman is doing it to you or something, you know.
Yeah. You know, our bodies communicate so much. And we can say the right thing, and it feels absolutely wrong. I mean, haven't you had that with your spouses where they'll say, what? You know, they you say something and they just kind of react to it and you think, where'd this come from? You say, well, you're angry at me. Oh, no, I'm not. This is what I said. And they say, but your face, you know, and you realize how you've been communicating. Yeah. It is hard. You know, it's interesting. Some people have talked to our oldest because they know I'm teaching this, you know. So you think he's not watching me to see to see how I'm doing, you know? I mean, he'll say, you know, he said to me, but do you teach that? You know, what? I say, what? I, no, that's one of the things, you know, I don't want to encourage people to say, I'm sorry, let me go back, you know? And I think he kind of appreciates that I'm trying.
And I think that honesty helps in taking any of this stuff back and saying, I'm not really happy with the way that I do this kind of thing. I'm trying to learn a new way of doing these things, yes. And this is what it may even look like. And I would like your help in trying to learn to do this new thing.
You bet.
You know, so that you take that manipulation out of it, yeah. By sharing that you're trying to learn a new skill.
Yeah. You know, if you read Rogerian counseling and, you know, how do you feel about that? And there are times it just seems like you're going through a computer. You know, you have a computer saying those responses and how we infuse them with life and what comes out of our heart. I think kids feel our heart a lot, you know, where our gut's coming. Descriptive praise. Another technique. And that's bad. Here I'm saying technique. Nailed me. Boo-boo. Another opportunity we have with our kids is to sum it up in a word. More cartoons. I love these cartoons. You've been working to memorize that vocabulary for over an hour. Now that's what I call persevering. Just give it a one-word little shot. Okay? How about this? You said you'd be home at 5 o'clock, and it's exactly 5. That's what I call
punctuality.
Okay, there could be other words, but that's, you bet. You only ate a little sliver of cake, even though you really love it. That really takes
willpower,
self-control, discipline. Okay. You notice that the plants are dry, and you water them. That's what's known as taking responsibility. Okay. And then what does the child say to themselves? I am responsible. I mean, you know, that's good. You're all set to go to that concert, and yet when it was canceled, you quickly made other plans. Now, that's what I call being
flexible.
And they say, I'm a flexible person. They praise themselves. You stood up for your friends even though the other kids made fun of him. That's
loyalty.
Courageous. Ooh. Okay. I mean, you know, you feel good, don't you, just hearing these words come out from us. They are absolutely beautiful. When we give a name for a child that is a positive, that is a touchstone that they can take with them into wherever they go. I had a friend I grew up with whose mother, I mean, I heard her mother say just millions of times, Joanne, you're so irresponsible. You know, and she went through years of being what I thought was irresponsible too. But I think it was a self-fulfilling process. You know, she got labeled, this negative label, and she grew up to think this must be what I am. I am irresponsible. So when we give good words, they take those into the future. Now, this is a little harder. And what I want you to pick one of your grandkids or one of the children. And I don't know if you have paper, pencil. I've got paper if you want to write it down. If you don't want to write it down, that's okay too. Think of a child. A quality you like about your child. Pick one. I hope there are many. Just pick one. Something that he or she has done recently that I appreciated but never mentioned. Okay? And then what could you say to show your appreciation to him or her using the skills of descriptive praise, or you could even do summing it up in a word, okay? Think of that child. Let's think about a blessing that we can pass on to one of our kids, okay? Do any of you want paper? I've got some if you want to take it. Some people think with paper and others don't.
I think with paper.
You think with paper?
Yeah, paper.
Thank
you.
Anybody else want paper? And usually got pens there. Anybody else? Okay. Take a few moments, get with your partner, see if you can share that and kind of maybe even work together on this. Okay?